at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News. I'm Faith Lapidus. President Trump renewed his attacks Monday on four Democratic members of Congress, all women of color, contending they had demeaned the United States, Israel, and the presidency. "When will the radical left congresswomen apologize," he tweeted, "for the foul language they have used and the terrible things they've said?" Trump's latest comments came a day after he drew sharp criticism for a series of tweets, condemned by some as racist and xenophobic, in which he suggested the lawmakers go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came. Only one of the representatives he targeted is an immigrant and a naturalized citizen. The others were born in the United States. Nationwide raids aimed at rounding up 2,000 immigrants in the country illegally for possible deportation got off to a low-key, almost invisible start Sunday. And fears among immigrant communities in big cities of black-helmeted agents kicking down doors and shouting orders did not materialize. However, the Trump administration has dramatically ramped up efforts to keep fewer migrants from crossing the southern border. AP's Sagar Magani reports.
The administration is moving to end asylum protections for most Central American migrants. A new rule expected to go into effect tomorrow says any asylum seekers who first pass through another country will be ineligible for asylum in the U.S., though there will be exceptions, such as for migrants who've been trafficked. Current law says refugees can request asylum here regardless of how they arrive, also with exceptions. The administration's new policy will almost certainly face legal challenges, as have its earlier bids to send asylum seekers back over the border and keep some detained while their cases play out. Sagar Magani at the White House.
This is VOA News. Anti-government protesters who fought running battles with police inside a Hong Kong shopping center were rioters, the city's pro-Beijing leader Carrie Lam said Monday, adding that she supported the actions of the police force. Police used batons and pepper spray to disperse thousands of protesters who again took to the streets of a Hong Kong suburb on Sunday to demand the complete withdrawal of a bill that would allow extraditions to mainland China, as well as Lam's resignation. The protest in Sha Tin was peaceful through most of the day, but scuffles broke out between police and demonstrators as the day came to an end. Iran threatened Monday to revert its nuclear development program to pre-2015 levels before it agreed to restraints under an international accord if the signatory countries fail to help its economy. The international pact called for sanctions relief for Tehran as it agreed to curbs on its nuclear program. But Donald Trump withdrew from the accord last year and reimposed tough punitive measures against the Islamic Republic. Tehran contends that Europe has not done enough to help it overcome the economic effects of the U.S. sanctions. Iran's foreign ministry said it would stay committed to the accord at the same level as the other signatories stay committed to it. British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said the deal isn't dead yet and that while the opportunity to find a resolution to the current crisis surrounding the agreement is closing, it is still possible to keep it alive. That will be on the agenda at the upcoming EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels. Two leading UN agencies report nearly 20 million children worldwide, more than 1 in 10, were not vaccinated against killer diseases such as measles, diphtheria, and tetanus in 2018. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Global life-saving vaccine coverage remains at 86%. This is high, but the World Health Organization says it is not high enough. It says 95% coverage is needed to protect against outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases. The worldwide measles outbreak is the most alarming example of what can happen when vaccine coverage falls below 95%. Most unvaccinated children live in the poorest countries, especially in fragile or conflict-affected states. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of those conflict-affected states is Democratic Republic of Congo, where health ministry officials said Monday two community health workers engaged in Ebola prevention were killed in the eastern North Kivu province. And they confirmed the first case of Ebola in Goma, a city of more than 2 million people along the Rwandan border. I'm Faith Lapidus. VOA News.
Today is Monday, July 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the latest from Washington after President Trump issues what many have called racist tweets aimed at members of Congress. Also, Iran is claiming moral victory in its standoff with the U.S. over Tehran's nuclear program, but can the deal be saved?
We think there is still some closing but small window to keep the deal alive, and that's what I'm here to talk about.
And the Trump administration unveils new asylum-seeking rules. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump remained focused on several Democratic members of Congress Monday after he drew sharp criticism for a series of tweets in which he suggested four lawmakers of color go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came. The controversy has not died down, with the president saying that he does not care if people think that his tweets are racist. Now, for more context, I earlier spoke with White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. So the tweet started on Sunday and again this morning. What's the latest from the White House on these controversial statements?
Well, no one at the White House is really talking about it. They're letting the president speak for himself, but he is getting at least one prominent defender in his party speaking out about it, and that's the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, who has helped the president double down on these four new members of Congress. And Senator Graham essentially calling them communists and anti-Semites.
Is that a fair and objective assessment?
No. They are not communists, obviously. They are elected members of the Democratic Party, and some of them have Democratic Socialist leanings, but that's quite a stretch from, in the eyes of any political scientist, from Democratic Socialist to communist.
In terms of, quote-unquote, going back home, has it been brought up in any of your discussions with sources that the president's family itself is a family of immigrants, and his wife is also an immigrant?
Well, that's the case for most people in this country, except for the Native American population who've been around here for many centuries longer than most of us who have antecedents from other countries. I immediately queried the White House on Sunday to ask whether the president was aware when he tweeted that three of the four members of Congress that he was targeting were in fact born in the United States. And until now, I have not received any reply to that query.
Are these tweets indicative of the president being the president?
All of this is very much in character with the president, who has really focused on targeting his base and trying to maintain the base and keep the base rallied up. And the president is also someone who never admits that he's made a mistake, never apologizes. When he was asked about the census decision the other day, backing away from getting the citizenship question on the 2020 census, he made an interesting remark saying, "I didn't back down, I backed up."
There has been some discord within the Democratic Party regarding immigration policy. What has been the response after these tweets?
Well, what we have here today now is a policy being announced by the Department of Homeland Security, basically to cut off that possible asylum route for those coming up from Mexico. And that would include some Africans as well, although the majority of people who come from Mexico to try to get asylum in the United States are from Central America. There have also been a notable number from Africa as well. So there's a perception that these policies that are being enacted under the Trump administration are not really equitable and are going beyond just the problem of trying to take care of illegal immigration, but are also targeting immigrants from parts of the world that the president's critics say that he is deeming to be undesirable.
And that was White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Attorney General William Barr says a new rule by the Trump administration uses a lawful exercise of authority to crack down on asylum claims at the U.S.-Mexico border. The rule was published Monday and will go into effect Tuesday, blocking migrants from seeking asylum in the United States if they've traveled through another country first. Tens of thousands of migrant families from Central America travel through Mexico to the U.S. each month, many claiming asylum. Barr says the U.S. is being completely overwhelmed by migration at the southern border. Homeland Security Acting Secretary Kevin McEachran says the new rule will help reduce a major pull factor driving irregular migration. The rule is almost certain to face a legal challenge. Immigrant rights groups say the Republican administration's policies are a cruel effort to keep immigrants out. Meanwhile, nationwide raids aiming at rounding up 2,000 immigrants in the country illegally for possible deportation got off to a low-key, almost invisible start on Sunday. No information where the arrests were being made or how many people have been detained has been released. And here are other major stories from around the world. Anti-government protesters who fought running battles with police inside a Hong Kong shopping center were rioters, the city's pro-Beijing leader Carrie Lam said on Monday. The health ministry of the Democratic Republic of Congo said two community health workers engaged in Ebola prevention have been killed in eastern North Kivu province after receiving death threats for months. Russian police arrested dozens of protesters in Moscow in a March Sunday demanding opposition candidates be placed on ballots for the city's parliamentary elections September 8th. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and with our VOA mobile application. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
July 20th marks the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, and the milestone will be celebrated throughout the United States. Festivities here in the U.S. capital city include a number of public events being led by the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. The museum's Apollo 11 moon landing celebration will feature a life-sized projection of an Apollo Saturn V rocket on the east face of the iconic Washington Monument each night from July 16th through the 18th. On July 19th and 20th, the Smithsonian, through a partnership with the U.S. Department of the Interior and 59 Productions, will present Apollo 50, Go for the Moon. This multimedia show will recreate the launch of Apollo 11 and tell the story of the first moon landing with imagery projected on the Washington Monument and other nearby supporting screens here in Washington, D.C. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Iran is claiming moral victory in its standoff with the United States over Tehran's nuclear program. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said Sunday that Washington has failed to win international support for tougher sanctions on Tehran for increasing its production of enriched uranium. Meanwhile, the British news media have published another leaked remark by the former British ambassador to the United States, in which he said U.S. President Donald Trump had abandoned an international nuclear deal with Iran just despite his predecessor, Barack Obama. VOA's Zlatissa Hoke reports.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani told a cheering crowd in the northern city of Shirvan on Sunday that U.S. pressure on Tehran has failed.
Over the past 14 months, whatever route the Americans went down, whether it was the social route, the political route, or the legal route, it led to their defeat.
The Trump administration has urged allies to support additional sanctions against Tehran after Iranian officials last week announced they had exceeded the country's limits of nuclear stockpile set in the 2015 international agreement. The Trump administration abandoned that deal last year and imposed economic sanctions on Iran. Tehran says its uranium enrichment program does not break any international laws.
You know that the issue of enrichment is not prohibited under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. This is the right of every member to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and this is Iran's right also. And what we are doing is, in a very transparent manner, is under the surveillance of the IAEA, the inspectors are there. Every single activity is under monitoring. We have nothing to hide.
But in response to the crippling sanctions, Iran is also attempting to block the passage of international oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. Last week, three Iranian ships tried to impede a British tanker, but gave up after a British naval vessel came to the tanker's rescue.
We are constantly monitoring the security and constantly keeping under review the kind of security that we need to keep British shipping safe.
U.S. defense officials say they are considering military escort for tankers passing through the area. In a show of force, the Pentagon on Sunday published footage of supply operations for its warship Harper's Ferry, which has recently joined U.S. forces in the Gulf region. Adding to the tensions, a British news report on Sunday published a leaked cable that British Ambassador to Washington Kim Darroch sent to London, in which he said that Trump abandoned the nuclear deal for no other reason than to spite former U.S. President Barack Obama. Darroch resigned last week after leaked diplomatic cables revealed that he described Trump's administration as inept and dysfunctional. In the newly published cable, he called Trump's withdrawal from the Iran deal diplomatic vandalism. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
European Union nations threw their diplomatic weight behind the unraveling Iran nuclear deal Monday, trying to rescue the pact from collapsing under U.S. pressure. Britain's Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said there was a small window of time to save the deal. And that was a sentiment echoed by EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Federica Mogherini.
We'll see how we can, together with all the member states and also with the rest of our international partners, preserve the nuclear deal with Iran and put in place all the measures so that Iran can go back to full compliance as it has been till a few days ago.
The World Health Organization reports 20 million children worldwide missing out on life-saving measles, diphtheria, and tetanus vaccines last year. Most are in poor countries. Lisa Schlein reports the worldwide measles outbreak shows what happens when children are not vaccinated against killer diseases.
Global life-saving vaccine coverage remains at 86%. This is high, but the World Health Organization says it is not high enough. It says 95% coverage is needed to protect against outbreaks of vaccine-preventable diseases. The worldwide measles outbreak is the starkest and most alarming example of what can happen when vaccine coverage across countries and communities falls below 95%. Last year, nearly 350,000 measles cases were reported globally, more than double that of 2017. WHO's director of the Department of Immunization, Vaccines and Biologicals, Kate O'Brien, warns measles outbreaks are not just persisting, but are increasing. She agrees some of the problem is due to misinformation and false information regarding the safety of the measles vaccine. But she says low coverage is mainly linked to sharp inequalities in both low-income and high-income countries.
Even in high-income countries, access to vaccines, inequality, and quality of care are often the greatest obstacles for parents to get vaccines for their children. So we want to emphasize both of these things, that barriers to vaccination are not only about poor countries, they're also about the situation in high-income and middle-income countries.
Nevertheless, O'Brien notes most unvaccinated children live in the poorest countries, especially in fragile or conflict-affected states. Almost half, she says, are in just 16 countries. 10 of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. WHO reports Nigeria, India, and Pakistan have the lowest vaccination rates. It finds only two regions, the Americas and Western Pacific, had lower vaccination coverage in 2018 than in 2017. Vaccinations in every other region, it says, have gone up or have plateaued. While Africa remains the region with the lowest vaccine coverage, WHO says it has not gone backwards. However, due to expected population rise, WHO projects fewer children in Africa are likely to receive life-saving vaccines in the coming decades. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A 23-year-old man who fled conflict in Afghanistan 6 years ago has died at an Australian immigration detention center. Phil Mercer reports that refugee groups say the death highlights serious concerns about the indefinite detention of asylum seekers.
Emergency services were called to the Melbourne Immigration Transit Accommodation Center late Friday. An Afghan national couldn't be revived and died. The cause of his death is unknown, but police say it's not being treated as suspicious. It's reported the man arrived in Australia seeking asylum as an unaccompanied minor in 2013 and had been asking for legal help to obtain a residency visa. Refugee campaigners believe the tragedy should be the subject of an official inquiry. They say that there are many other Afghan asylum seekers languishing for indefinite periods in detention facilities. Carolyn Graydon is from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, an independent organisation in Melbourne.
What's really needed here is a broader inquiry into the circumstances of how he was treated, arriving as an unaccompanied minor through a very protracted refugee determination process, a process that has been designed to punish people that are arrived by boat.
Australia automatically detains all asylum seekers, while health and security checks are carried out. It's been official policy since the early 1990s and has the support of both major political parties. Since 2013, Australia began sending asylum seekers arriving by boat to detention camps in the South Pacific. A facility in Papua New Guinea closed in 2017 after a local court ruled it was unconstitutional, but hundreds of former detainees remain in the impoverished country. A second centre on the tiny island of Nauru continues to operate. Australia has argued offshore detention saves lives by deterring migrants from making hazardous sea crossings. Critics, though, say the policy is inhumane and breaks international law. At the end of May 2019, official government figures show there were 1,270 people in immigration detention facilities on the Australian mainland. Detainees from Iran, New Zealand and Vietnam include asylum seekers and others who've either breached immigration regulations or have overstayed their visas. The average period of time for those held in detention was over 500 days. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, after months of violent protests in Sudan, a preliminary power-sharing agreement has been negotiated between the Forces for Democratic Change and the Transitional Military Council. Sudan in transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Need a little Straight Talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Russia flew a fresh shipment of advanced air defense equipment to Turkey Saturday, the Turkish defense ministry claimed, continuing to implement a deal that is likely to trigger U.S. sanctions against its NATO ally. U.S. officials had warned that Turkey would be thrown off the F-35 fighter jet program if they took delivery of the S-400 missiles and would also face sanctions under U.S. legislation seeking to prevent countries from buying military equipment from Russia. Earlier, I spoke with Stephen Flanagan, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation, and I started our conversation by asking him how this situation developed.
There was a series of efforts. The Turks had been very concerned about this gap in their own defense capabilities, which is defense against ballistic missiles. They were most immediately concerned in 2000 as the Syrian civil war unfolded about ballistic missiles coming from Syria. But in the back of their minds, I think they're also concerned down the road about Iran and other potential adversaries in the region. So they have been looking to improve this capability for some time. Now, the U.S. began efforts in as early as 2009 under the Obama administration, a series of efforts to provide a Patriot, a NATO interoperable U.S.-made system, the Patriot PAC-3, in various forms with certain elements of price, technology sharing, and even possibly elements of co-development. But the Turks, over the course of time, first of all, they thought the U.S. offer was too expensive, so they began to look at the Chinese option in 2013. There was a lot of pressure to turn that off, and the Turks did. At the same time, they began to look at more seriously at the Russian system.
So is there a way to mitigate the situation and not exasperate relations between Washington and Ankara?
That is the question. Can you contain this? I mean, I think what the U.S. and NATO should be seeking is a damage limitation, a long-term damage limitation strategy right now to try to contain this. The people that are most pleased with this development are, of course, first of all, Putin, but also the what is known as the so-called Eurasianists within Turkey, those who argue that Turkey should, its interests are not being well served by being a member of NATO anymore in this relationship with the European Union, and that it should pursue a more balanced relationship with Russia, Iran, and other countries in Eurasia, hence their appellation of the Eurasianists. And those are the people that have been most pleased with this development. But there are many Turks. The main opposition parties that garnered up to 47% of the vote in the 2018 presidential and parliamentary elections ran on a platform against this break with the West. In fact, arguing for an effort to try to restore ties with NATO and the European Union and to be more effective, because that's where Turkey's long-term interests rest. And so, I think that what needs to be done is, there's no doubt that when you look at this strong bipartisan consensus in the U.S. Senate and Congress, that the statements that have been made by the chair and ranking member of the Armed Services Committee, that there should be in the Senate, that there should be strong sanctions imposed. I think that can be done. But I think what should be done is implement sanctions that don't further exacerbate the breach with the United States and play into the Russians' hand. I think it's important that the United States keep the channels, and the European governments and other NATO governments keep the channels open to Turkey. I think the danger of Turkey being non-aligned and completely outside of NATO, I think that is more disruptive to U.S. and European interests than having Turkey in the alliance as a bit of a bad boy within the alliance and finding ways to contain and mitigate the damage while showing Turkey that there are at least the current Turkish political leadership, that there are some costs for the decisions that they've taken.
And that was Stephen Flanagan, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation. China's government and Chinese companies will cut business ties with U.S. firms selling arms to Taiwan. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang called the arms sale a severe violation of international law and a violation of the One China Principle and the regulations of three Sino-U.S. joint communiques. He also asserted the sales harm China's sovereignty and national security. China claims self-ruled and democratic Taiwan as its own and has never renounced the possible use of force to bring it under Beijing's control. China regularly calls Taiwan the most sensitive issue in its relations with the United States. Last week, the Pentagon said the U.S. State Department had approved the sale of the weapons requested by Taiwan, including 108 General Dynamics Corporation's M1A2T Abrams tanks and 250 Stinger missiles, which are manufactured by Raytheon. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, engineer John Dryden, and managing editor Paul Alexander, thank you so much for joining us. Now, for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on social media like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download the stories and take them with you. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a magnificent Monday.
Hello, Africa. This is Let's Talk, where we take a light